All right. Hey, everyone. I am super excited today because on the line, I have someone very, very special to me. And this person is one of the stars of the hit movie, The Secret. He's the CEO and founder of One Coach. And he was also one of the stars in the hit movie, The Quest for Success, with the Dalai Lama and Richard Branson. He's also someone that I personally hired several years ago to be my coach and help me with my mindset, and has put literally, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in my pocket with the help that he's given me. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Ashraf.
Hey, Steve, great to be on with you. And hi, everybody. I hope you're all having an amazing day or evening.
Hey, John, let's just jump right into this year because I want to start really digging into your mindset secrets for success. So I'm just going to start right away with the first question, which is, what, in your opinion, is the key to making a positive change in your business? And what I mean by that is, you know, let's say you're plugging along and you're doing okay, but you want to go from doing okay to just killing it and doing great. What do you think is the key to that?
Well, I think, you know, if we're talking about, you know, personal trainers, people that are helping other people make changes in their own, let's say, physiques and health, then if you think about what you're doing, you're giving them new information, you're giving them instruction of what to do with that information, and then you are putting them in the environment of making the habitual changes that they need. And so you do that through accountability, you do that through motivation, you do that through a variety of different means, and you do that over a period of time because, you know, if somebody comes to the gym, for example, one time, or somebody buys your DVD or CD or product or ebook, and you don't get consumption in the mix, then they only change for a moment or a day or a weekend. And so there's a wonderful formula. That's really why I started One Coach, was not just to give people the right information in the right order with the instruction, but to put them in the environment where change is inevitable. Every one of us becomes conditioned, and we end up in our comfort zone. So you might be in a comfort zone of making 30 grand a year, or 50, or 75, or 100, or 200, or a million. The number doesn't make any difference, just like weight doesn't make any difference. It's just what the comfort zone is. And the key is you have to understand that in order to alter the results long-term, you have to alter, A, the internal image, and B, the habits of what people are doing day-to-day. And that's really the key to altering long-term results.
Hey, thanks, John. Let me ask you a question. I know you're super positive and you make huge things happen and you take quantum leaps in your business and in your life. Do you ever feel or experience fear and doubt? And if so, what do you do about it?
Fear, rarely, especially in business. Doubts all the time. And when I have a feeling of doubt, you know, the question that I always come back to, see, I've trained myself to have an awareness of my feelings. And the reason I say that is whenever you and I, you know, try something new or about to try something new, there's some mental game going on. And one of those mental games releases a chemical in the bloodstream that's supposed to cause doubts, fears, and anxieties if you let it perpetuate. And so let's say you want to do something you've never done before. It's a little bit risky. It's a little bit dangerous. And that could be because you don't have enough information. You may not have the skill. You may not have the experience. Whatever the reason is, there's chemicals that are released in the brain that causes an uncomfortable feeling. And what most people don't understand is feeling is just awareness of the vibration that your body is in. And whenever we're about to do something different, our body goes into the awareness, I'm going to call it the awareness, of something different's about to happen. Most people misinterpret what that feeling is, and they let that feeling stop them in the form of rationalizing. And rationalizing is nothing more than rational lies. Now, the brain wants to keep you in your comfort zone, as I just mentioned, and the way it does that is by giving you these rational lies while your comfort zone is where you should stay. But highly successful people feel that feeling, have that internal dialogue, and either they learn how to override that and do it anyway, or they learn what's happening and they say, I understand what's happening, let's move forward anyway. And so it's very, very normal to have doubts. Most people just don't understand why they're caused. They think that they're negative. They're not. Doubts are amazingly positive when you understand how to utilize them to your benefit. They can act as an actual lever or leverage point for you. When you know that you are doubtful, fearful, you know that you're about to grow. And the key is to mitigate your risk with knowledge, instruction, and help.
Hey, John, what do you do when you talk about internal dialogue? Let's say you do have one of those doubts and you're about to do something. You know it's just chemicals in your brain and you're feeling this doubt. What is your internal dialogue to overcome that?
First and foremost, I go, oh, there you are again. So I laugh at the fact that my brain is making me so aware of it, and I've actually become very, very aware of that dialogue. And so I said, there you are again. I said, thanks for the warning. You're released now. Bye-bye.
Nice. Awesome.
I just have this just a very, very quick dialogue. But, you know, depending on what I'm about to do or what I'm experiencing, I may take the time and say, okay, what knowledge am I missing? What strategies may I not be thinking of? And then if I don't have the right gut feeling, then I'll bring in some of my mastermind group and some of the people that I could say, hey, I'm about to do this or I'm thinking of taking this action. What are your thoughts? Here's what I've done. Here's what I'm thinking. What am I missing?
I love it. Awesome.
So I always have a group of people that run things by me and I run things by them as well.
Now, let me ask you a question, and this might seem like a silly question to you, but do you ever feel unmotivated? And if so, like, what do you do to keep yourself motivated all the time?
The answer is yes, sometimes I feel unmotivated, and usually when I'm unmotivated, I've disconnected from my real purpose and value of what I value most. And so I get unmotivated at times when I'm doing things that I don't love to do, like the tedious, mundane things that every business requires. And so when I get unmotivated, I usually will take some time and ask myself, you know, what's the big picture? Why am I really doing this? Like, I know my vision. It's right here in front of me on my wall. It says to help millions of people worldwide believe and utilize their true abilities and genius and provide them with the environment, tools, and resources to achieve their purpose, lifestyle, and life of their dreams. So that's my vision. And so whenever I don't feel like doing something, I say, am I committed to that vision? Am I committed to that purpose in my life? And when the answer is yes, I go, okay, then I need to do this. And so if your why is big enough, why you're doing what you're doing, then you'll do the things that sometimes are unmotivating, the things that you don't want to do, because the big vision and the big why is bigger than the stuff that I don't like to do.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, man. Yeah. Hey, John. All right, I know you're huge in setting goals. I know you're a pro at that. Can you share a little bit of your goal-setting strategies?
What, one more time? I didn't hear the last part.
I know you're really, really big into setting goals. I know uh-huh. that. I mean, gosh, when I first heard of you was when I was watching the movie The Secret, and I saw your vision board and your goals right there. I knew you were a big-time goal setter. Can you kind of just share your method for setting goals? Like, what do you do? Do you write them out? Do you put pictures? Do you, like, have them on your computer? Do you print? Like, what do you do to set goals?
Well, number one is I never set goals based on what I think I can achieve. I always set goals based on what I want to achieve. I figured out a long time ago then the how always comes after the what. So I force myself to set very, very big goals. That's number one. Number two, you know, once you set a goal, I ask myself, what are the strategies that I can think of that can get me to those goals? So what are the strategies? So goal first, strategy second. So strategies are what you think you would need to do to achieve that goal. And then the tactics comes after that. That's one of the things I tell you at one coach, that when we analyze business owners who are making, you know, 50 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand, 500 grand, 95%+ of them are working too much on tactics and not enough on strategy. And so if you think about what are the strategic initiatives, what are the strategies that you want to achieve, then you think of what are the tactics within that strategy. That's a much more logical way of doing it, something that we call a smart growth process versus working harder, which is what most business owners are doing. And so, for example, for 2010, I've got five strategic initiatives for my John Assaraf brand. Five strategic initiatives. And then there's probably 100 tactics in order to achieve that. And so strategies first, tactics second. Always, always, always. It's kind of like if you were building a home, all right, you wouldn't just buy a piece of land, hire a bunch of workers, and start building the frame and start building the windows and start laying the carpet. You would design a blueprint first of what you want it to look like. Then you create a strategy for what needs to happen first. Then you do the tactics. And very few business owners take the time to think of it that way, and that's why they're stressed out, they're overworked, underpaid, and they don't build businesses that they can sell for, you know, $1 million or more, or cash machines that consistently bring in money so that they can live the lifestyle of their dreams. They're consistently working at the tactical level to drive more money, make more money, make more money, make more money, make more money this week, next week, the week after. And there isn't a strategy and a system in place that does that.
So they're kind of their own bottleneck, right?
They're their own bottleneck, and most business owners are looking to make revenues while they build their business, and that's fine. But I'm going to go back to my building a home analogy. You'd never do that with your home. Why are you doing it with your business?
You're making a lot of sense. Hey, I'll switch gears again one more time, and this is kind of, I kind of asked this in the first question, but I just want to change it up a little bit. What do you think the secret is to just turning a thought into a reality? Like, let's say I'm a trainer and I train clients, and all of a sudden now maybe I want to have an info product, or maybe I want to have a business that runs by itself. What do you think, like, the key is to taking a thought or a dream and actually making it something that's real, that actually happens?
Well, there's lots of thoughts that we have and lots of desires that we have. But thoughts and desires are pale in comparison to habits. And so when we look at it from a neuroscience or brain research science perspective, everything that we do at the action level, 96 to 98% of what we do at the action level is because of our beliefs and our habits at a subconscious level. So if you want to change your results, it's not really a focus on actions that you want to be focused on initially, because we can take actions making a conscious decision, but they won't last. What we want to do is change the internal software of our habits and our beliefs, and that's probably one of the areas I believe I'm the best in the world at, and that is to really change the internal programming, no differently than if you think about a computer. There's the hardware, there's the operating system, and the software. Right, it's the software that determines the output, not the operating system and not the hardware. It's the software. What's the program? And whatever goes into the program gets spit out by the operating system. And so human beings are the same thing. We've got our body, which is our hardware. We've got our brain, which is the operating system. But it's the beliefs the values, and the habits that drive our behaviors. And so as opposed to starting where most people start, which is at the action or behavior level, it doesn't work long term. And that's probably where I've made my fortune, is helping people change from the inside out and really win the inner game first. As a matter of fact, Steve, I just finished recording yesterday, Winning the Inner Game of Business Success. That's the most advanced internal programming material, including CDs that people will just listen to, and it'll help change the inside software. So pretty amazing stuff.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And now let's switch gears again to a totally different question. Do you, with everything that you have going on, I know you have three three main businesses that we were talking about before. Do you ever feel overwhelmed ever? Like, oh man, I have so much stuff to do in only a certain amount of hours in a day?
Yeah, I feel that a lot, especially lately, because I've got two new startups that are launching. And so I've got CEOs placed in both of those companies. And so right now I'm working 7 days a week. I'm doing a lot of stuff that I shouldn't be doing. So yes, I'm feeling overwhelmed right now. But I also have just hired two executive assistants, one in the Philippines that all she does is go through my emails and calendar and schedules my appointments. So, you know, that's been removed. I took my existing executive assistant, moved her into a higher role. So this has been happening for about 30 days. So I just went into, okay, what's causing the overwhelm? And then how do I resolve it? And so, you know, for example, this weekend I got a pile of stuff done, and I'm heading out of town today for about 4 days of just chill.
So like, what do you do when you feel overwhelmed and you wanna outsource stuff, but it's overwhelmed with stuff that you have to do yourself? How do you deal with that? What do you do when that happens?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I ask myself all the time, you know, what's my highest income producing activity? What's my highest impact producing activity every day? All right. And what you want to do is make sure that you delegate everything that's not your highest income or highest impact producing activity. And it's just a function of daily, weekly, and monthly reviews of what am I doing? How effective am I? You know, what am I doing that I shouldn't be doing? What are the critical few things that I need to get done every day versus the trivial many that I am doing? And that's how you start to become much more aware of what you're doing. And again, I mean, that's one of the reasons we started One Coach, is to keep small business owners and solopreneurs, you know, accountable to certain behaviors every day, every week, every month.
Cool, man. Let me shift gears one more time again. I'm sure you agree that, I know that you agree that anytime you want to grow or take a quantum leap in your business or in your life, you have to get out of your comfort zone. When you're in your comfort zone, you're not making progress. You're not making giant steps of progress. What do you do? What is your internal dialogue? What's your strategy for when it calls for it to get out of your comfort zone? And I'm talking about, like, not just your regular typical comfort zone. I mean, like, things that where you're like, wow, man, this is pretty intense. How do you force yourself to get out of your comfort zone?
I set really, really big global goals now. And so, you know, my goals for my businesses start at 100 million. And I go from 100 million to a billion for every business now. Now, I couldn't even think of, you know, setting a goal for $1 million 20 years ago. But now I can't set one for less than 100. It doesn't even pique my interest. I've been there twice, and so it just doesn't even pique my interest. If I can't think of a way to get a business to 100 million or to a billion, it doesn't even pique my interest. And so I set pretty big goals of things I want to achieve financially. I set big goals of things I want to achieve for charities. I just take myself right to the extreme of what I can envision, and that's always, you know, based again on your beliefs and the habits of what you've gotten used to thinking. And the other thing that helps me quite a bit is, you know, I wrote about the universal laws in my first book, Having It All, a little bit more in The Answer, my second New York Times best-selling book. And, you know, I talk about how, you know, your brain is like a radio receiver and messenger. And so if you think about, you know, if you turn on your radio and you want to listen to rock and roll, you go to a certain station. You want to listen to classical, you go to a certain station. You want to listen to hip-hop, you turn to a certain station. Well, you and I have the ability to use our brain no differently than a radio station. Whatever goal we set, we start to tune into those stations. And so the size of the goal really doesn't matter. What you've got to do is match up the size of the goal with the internal belief, again, and habits that will drive your perceptions and behaviors to achieve that goal. And that's one of the things that I've noticed and found is the most successful people are not necessarily the smartest people. The most successful people just do things that other people don't do. And they think things that other people who are not at that level think. They're just tuning in to a different station of thought, and they're tuning in to a different station of behavior.
You know, I'm going to kind of break it down even, like, more to something that's really relevant to trainers. A lot of times trainers know that one of the things that they have to do, one of the fastest way to grow their business is to get, you know, like 20 to 40 people into their boot camp at a really discounted rate so that they could get referrals. And one of the fastest ways to do that is to just talk to 20 people a day. And it sounds so simple because talking to 20 people a day within 30 days, if you're guaranteed to be on pace, you know, for six figures, why would you never not do that? So what would you do, or what would you say to a trainer that's like having trouble? They know that they have to do this, but they're so uncomfortable talking to people that they don't know, talking to strangers, approaching people. What would you say to them to get over that, to as a strategy to overcome that?
Well, again, if we think about what's causing, okay, their procrastination, what's causing their feeling of not wanting to make calls, what's causing their belief, you know, that they don't like rejection, they don't want to talk to people. It's a belief, an internal belief that has associations with it, the software, the neural networks in the belief that's caused them to not take the action that they want. It's the exact same belief or habit that doesn't get people to go to the gym and work with a trainer. And so what we've got to understand is that, you know, it's our brain, it's our software, and we're able to control it by doing some of the inner size. Most of the people you work with focus on exercise, but you've got to understand that there's also an inner game here, and that's called inner size. And that's where you really focus on the neural networks, the software that drives all your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions or lack of actions. Let's start going to cause versus effects. Most people out there are working at the effect level, but I prefer to work at the cause level.
Okay. So with that said, what would you, like, right now, a trainer sitting there and they go, man, I gotta talk to 20 people today, but I'm so uncomfortable. What's their next step? Like,
well, the next step, number one, is to write down a belief that they would have in order to make doing that easy. Right? So for example, if you've got, you know, a feeling that, you know, I don't like to make sales calls. It's not making the sales calls that you don't like. It's the meaning you have around making the sales calls and being rejected that you don't like. So a lot of people have this feeling like, well, I don't want to bug people. Well, you know, it's not right for me to call them. I shouldn't be making outward bound calls. It's not what I should be doing. Somebody else should do that. Right, so there's all this dialogue. I'd write down what are all the reasons you don't and what are all the feelings associated with making those calls. Like, for example, I used to make a fortune dialing for dollars, I called it, when I was selling real estate. You know, when I was taught to sell real estate, I was given a sheet of paper, and on the sheet it had 100 boxes. And every box had the increments of $15. So box number one had 15, box number two had 30, box number three had 45, 60, 75, 90, so on. All the way to box number 100 had 1,500. And I was taught that if I learned this script and I called 100 people and I spoke to them, by the time I'd finished, you know, calling these 100 people and using this script, I would earn $1,500. And I was also taught that 95 out of 100 people are going to say no thank you. And I was also taught that the no thank you, some of them were rude saying it, some of them hung up on me, some of them thought I was a jerk. What it really meant was that they're not interested in my product or service right now, move on to the next one. So I learned how to frame the meaning of rejection differently. I learned that in order to make $1,500, I need to speak to 100 people, and if I wanted to make $3,000 or $4,500 or $6,000 or $10,000 a month, whatever the number was, here's the number of people I'd need to speak to. Here's the number that would say no. And for everyone that would say yes, then I'd have a new script. And so I just learned how to frame it in my mind in a way, okay, that really worked well for me. And so in my first year, I made about $30,000. In my second year, I made $151,000. And then I went over to make millions of dollars a year by understanding that people's responses or reactions to me, okay, was one thing. How I interpreted it was another. So I just created meanings around what things meant that served me instead of hindered me. And that's just a little bit of a science on how to do that. You could do that through some affirmations. You could do that through visualizations. You could do that through associations, associating neurologically, you know, what something means with something else that has a really good meaning. That's a little bit more of an advanced technique. But there are techniques to get you to change a little bit from the inside out so that making cold calls can be actually fun. And making calls to people that you don't know can be a source of enjoyment. Now, it takes a little bit of time, but what's the alternative? To be poor? To not reach your potential? To, you know, are you gonna allow a little bit of your feelings and thoughts right now control your destiny? Or are you going to be the type of person that says, no, I'll do the inner size. I'll do what I need to do on the inside. Just show me what. And that's where I might be able to help some of the people here.
Awesome. I love it. What do you do to keep from getting burnt out? And do you ever just feel like a little bit of burnout?
Nope.
I don't know how trainers feel that way.
No. I work 6 weeks, take 1 week off. Work 6 weeks, take 1 week off. Work 6 weeks, take 1 week off. So, no, I take 3 months a year off minimum. And that way I stay fresh. I work out. I eat well. I meditate every day. I've got a system and a process. The one thing I learned when I was in my 20s is put your vacations into your calendar first and fit all the rest of the work into the balance of the time.
That's awesome. I love that.
Right. So, and guess what happens? You then become more efficient the time you are working. You learn to upgrade your skills so that you're making more per hour. I keep raising my rates. You know, I'm at $2,500 an hour right now for private consultations, and I get $25,000 in the U.S. for a keynote, $35,000 in Canada, and $75,000 overseas for speaking for 90 minutes. So I just keep raising my rates and getting more business.
You know what? That might have been one of the coolest tips, the coolest strategies I ever heard, honestly, is to put a 1 week vacation every 6 weeks in your calendar before you even plan out your year, and then schedule everything else around it. I mean, gosh, if you know you're taking a vacation, everyone's going to work harder, everyone's going to be more focused, and you're going to force yourself to enjoy life more.
You have to. You know, one of the things that I learned a long time ago was write out the lifestyle that you want to live and then become the person who could live that lifestyle and earn the amount of money you need to earn to live that lifestyle. So don't allow your current circumstances to control your thinking and your lifestyle. Determine the lifestyle that you need to live and then ask them, what do I need to learn? What do I need to read? Who do I need to hire? Who do I need to partner with? Who do I need to barter with? What strategies do I need to implement? So work in reverse.
I love it. You know what? I'm that's my biggest takeaway so far is as soon as we get off this phone call, I'm going to go ahead and every 6 weeks I'm going to put a week vacation on my calendar.
It'll change your life.
I love that.
I've been on 6 vacations so far this year.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I've accelerated it.
Yeah, I love that. So let's switch gears again. People talk about all the time the 80-20 rule. 80% of your actions, 20% of your actions account for about 80% of your income. And now it's gotten ratcheted down with the internet and everything to like 95-5, where 5% of your actions seem to take the place of or seem to be responsible for 95% of your income. What do you do? Well, first of all, what's your take on this philosophy, and what do you do to ensure that you're abiding by it?
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's 95-5, but you can definitely measure, you know, certain actions have got a significantly higher return on investment monetarily and non-financially than others. And different businesses will have different ratios. But, you know, what I look at is, number one is, do you know what your highest income producing activity is, first and foremost? Do you know what is it that when you do it, That's when you're earning the most amount of money. If you don't, you better. Number two, do you know what your highest impact producing activity is for the results that you want to get? Right? So for example, one of my highest impact producing activities is strategizing for the success of my businesses. So creating the strategic plan and initiatives for that. And so I'm not the doer. I'm the visionary. I'm the connector. But I'm not the one who likes to go and do all the little things. I like to deliver the message. I like to write research and strategize. When I do that, I'm operating on all cylinders. When I get into anything else, I'm earning a fraction of what my capabilities are. Let me share a story with you that will give you a good visual. Many years ago, Frank Sinatra was in Las Vegas getting ready for a show, and he was practicing his singing. And one of the stagehands said, "Hey, Mr. Sinatra, would you mind just helping me move this piano over here to the other part of the stage?" And Frank Sinatra looked at this young man and says, "Son," says, "I don't get paid to move pianos." And obviously that was his way of saying, "I get paid to sing." Right. And so what do you get paid to do? You know, so right now, many of the people listening, they're getting paid to deliver and perform the service, right? So they're going to trade their time for money. And so the key is to calculate and figure out, well, how can I trade my time for more money if number one, I really love what I do and really, you know, want to do what I do. And so those are the types of things you've got to start thinking about.
Now,
hey, Steve, I've got an interview that I've got to be on, and so we got to wrap this up.
Okay, cool. All right, got it. Hey, you have time for one more question, John?
I actually do not. I'm really sorry. I'm 4 minutes late already.
You know what? I really appreciate your time. We've got more than enough in this one. Hey, if someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
You know, there's some great videos I've got on johnassaraf.com. It's JohnAssaraf. That's johnassaraf.com. And that's a great place to start. And if they have a business, go to OneCoach, onecoach.com. We've got some great business growth videos right there.
Hey, man, we've gotten more than enough out of this interview. Thank you for your time, John.
And thanks, buddy. Yeah. Take care, Steve. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.